Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Thanks for coming out to sit today. How about we go around and hear names, and we could repeat back the name.
Oscar.
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 John.
Catherine.
Catherine.
David.
Larry.
Joel.
Joel.
Sarah.
Kokyo.
Jim.
Jeff.
Jeff.
Jeff. Hi.
Ron.
Barry.
Karen.
Well, I would propose that all the teachings and practices of all the Buddhas and Zen ancestors are only to free us from illusions, particularly the unconscious illusion that we are separate, that I am a separate self over here, talking to you as other over there. It seems that way. I'm somebody over here talking to somebody over there, and we might have some relationship, but we're basically separate. We're not the same anyway. And that there's hundreds and thousands and millions of teachings that point to how to dissolve this illusion, but one of the greatest, I say, is the teaching of Buddha nature. Buddha nature is what we all share. It is our non-separation. We don't say, I have a Buddha nature over here, relating to your Buddha nature over there. Buddha nature is that which we share most intimately. We might share other things too, but what we really share across the board is Buddha nature. Like, I don't know you all so well, you don't know me so well as a person, but we know each other already completely and intimately as Buddha nature. That's what we are. Without knowing anything about the details of our lives, the content of our lives. And not only us, but everyone around the world, we share this Buddha nature, and not only humans, but all sentient beings, we share this one reality of Buddha nature. So, it's closely related to this topic of non-separation. I can say it is non-separation. But sounds kind of like an abstract idea. What is this Buddha nature? So for today, I would propose that it's just simply present awareness. The awareness that's the same for all of us. The content of our consciousness is obviously quite different every moment, but that which knows our experience is indistinguishable, basic knowing awareness. And the tradition has often brought up analogies to hint at what this Buddha nature is, and one of the classic analogies is radiant light. So that's called this topic of this retreat, the radiant light of Buddha nature. It's just an analogy, but it's a good one, I say. Right now, this room is filled with light. We're just talking about regular old electromagnetic radiation of light, scientifically speaking. The room is filled with light. We wouldn't be able to see anything if it wasn't. But if we look for the light itself, where is the light that's filling the room? We can't see it as anything. It's not something that can be seen. And yet, it's illuminating everything in the room. Everything we see is illuminated by the light. So we can know that there is light, even though we can't see it. The proof that light is filling the room is that we can see all the objects in the room. So there's ordinary light just filling the room right now. But if we try to get a hold of it or even see it, we can't see it. Just like this awareness right now is illuminating everything in the room. It's knowing everything in the room. Everything is known by, through, as awareness. And yet we can't see the awareness itself. But we know that it's here, otherwise we wouldn't experience anything. So for today, I also propose another name for Buddha nature, besides awareness, is experiencing. Not an experiencer, not an experience, but experiencing. Experiencing for us sentient beings takes these forms such as seeing. There's a type of experiencing, right? We're seeing colors. Hearing sounds is a type of experiencing. Tasting, smelling, touching, cognizing, feeling feelings, so on. These are all types of experiencing. They're all types of awareness. They can be happening simultaneously. Different types of knowing, different types of awareness, different types of experiencing. And what is this experiencing? It's hard to say. We can say a lot about the experiences of colors and sounds and tastes and smells and tactile sensations and bodily feelings and emotions and thoughts. Those are all the known, the experienced experiences. But what is the experiencing? Of course there's experiencing. But we can't get a hold of it. And yet, it is most intimately what we are. We might even go so far as to call it ourself. Self seems to be this word that refers to what we feel to most truly be our identity. that which we feel to always be the case is usually what we mean by the word self. Or I, when we say I, or Kokyo, it seems to be that which is always the case. But before we stop to look at what our self might be, it seems like we often assume that it's like this body. It seems like the body's always the case, but actually the body's always changing. Or it seems like our thoughts, our stream of thoughts, is ourself, because it always seems to be a stream of thoughts going. But that's constantly changing too. So the Buddha taught all conditioned, impermanent experiences are not myself. Over and over the Buddha would teach, this body is not myself, these feelings are not myself, they're not truly who I am. Even these perceptions of experiences are changing all the time, they're not myself. All these karmically conditioned patterns, habitual tendencies and so on, these are all changing too, and they're all conditioned, so they're not myself. And even consciousness, this consciousness in Buddhism usually refers to the mind that's knowing some object. It's a kind of divided knowing, vijnana. So this consciousness always arises dependent on some object of experience. So that's also dependent and impermanent, conditioned, is not myself, is consciousness. These five aggregates of body and mind, any experience of body and mind is impermanent and conditioned and not myself, the Buddha says. But contrary to some popular assumptions, the Buddha actually never taught that there is no self. He taught many, many times that body's not myself, feelings are not myself, perception's not myself, habitual karmic formations are not myself, this dualistic consciousness that arises dependent on an object is not myself. He taught that many times, so maybe people started assuming then, I guess then there's no self. But there's one of the Buddha's early teachings where somebody asks the Buddha, well, is there a self or not? And the Buddha doesn't answer. But if they asked, is this body or this consciousness myself? The Buddha would say no. And then later, at the end of the Buddha's life, according to the Mahayana teachings, the great vehicle teachings, the radical, vast teachings, in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, the great, complete Nirvana Sutra, again, a monk asked the Buddha, maybe 50 years after the first monk asked the Buddha, is there a self? And the Buddha didn't answer. Somebody again said, nobody's asked him that for a while. Let's ask him again, after they heard all these teachings. Bhagavan, Blessed One Buddha, is there a self or not? And this time the Buddha said, yes. Yes. Is there an Atman? Is there a self? And the sutra, the Buddha says, yes, there is. And then the Buddha said, all sentient beings completely are Buddha nature, and this Buddha nature is the self, the Atman. And at this point, because it was the end of the Buddha's life, all the Buddha's followers had heard this teaching so many times that all these experiences of body and mind are not myself, that they didn't get confused when they heard this new teaching. Although it became a kind of controversial thing after the Buddha's passing. Some people thought, you can't say that. The self would leave something to grasp onto. But like the light in this room that's illuminating the room actually cannot be grasped onto. Therefore, we needn't try. This experiencing is itself ungraspable. This present knowing awareness cannot be grasped. So grasping is the source of suffering. But to think that this body is me and grasp that, this will lead to our suffering, because this body is unreliable, it will disappear. We can't rely on it completely. Even our dualistic consciousness arising dependent on an object. Well, when there's no object there, we can't rely on it. It won't be there. But the ever-present radiant light of awareness, Buddha nature, can be our refuge. It can't be grasped, and yet it's ever-present, and the support for all experiences. You can't have an experience without experiencing. None of us has ever not been experiencing. We've never had a moment of non-experiencing, I suppose. If we did, we wouldn't know anything about it. All we know is experiencing. And part of the liberating teaching of this Buddha nature, awareness, experiencing, is that whatever the experience is, the experiencing of it is always the same. So we could have a very painful experience or a very pleasurable experience, but the experiencing, the awareness, the most basic ever-present awareness is just aware. Therefore, it's in itself free from experiences of suffering and pleasure. So, what do we do with this radiant light of Buddha nature? How can we practice with it? How can we access it? It seems like we can't get a hold of it, right? So is it just faith that there's an experiencing awareness right now? Or can we actually recognize it? Start to become familiar with it? Start to become intimate with its qualities? So, I propose that a really great method, practice for this, that I really like to use myself and doesn't seem to wear out for me. It might not work for you, because there's, hundreds of thousands of methods, right? But you might not have heard this one, so you could try this out. Which is during Zazen, or not during Zazen, anytime through the day, you can ask yourself various questions. We call it inquiry. So it's nice in Zazen when we're really, especially when we're first getting used to it, if we're quite still and present and not doing much else, then you can really get into these inquiries. But as you get used to it, or even if you're not used to it, you can always try this out. Right in the total chaotic, busy situation, these types of inquiries can be applied anywhere. So the beginning question I find quite helpful is to ask myself, am I aware? Is awareness present right now? So you can try it out. For example, right now, you can ask yourself, is awareness present right now? And to clarify this a little bit, by this awareness, I don't mean like you're really present, like mindful, paying attention. Like, no, I was just distracted, so awareness wasn't present. That's not the awareness I'm talking about. The awareness I'm talking about is the one that's always present. If we're so-called distracted, like totally distracted, like I'm not even really thinking about this talk, I'm just thinking about lunch, actually. And like, we can ask, is awareness present right now? This is the awareness that's completely present when total chaotic thoughts are happening. We might not notice it until we ask the question, because we're really involved in the content of the thoughts about lunch. But the thoughts about lunch, total distracted thoughts, are what we call an experience. So there's an experiencing of total distraction. I'm talking about the experiencing of total distraction, or the experiencing of total concentration. The experiencing, I propose, is exactly the same. That's the one we're talking about, this awareness. This Buddha nature doesn't change when we're distracted. It's just awareness of total chaos and distraction, or awareness of total fear and anxiety, or awareness of total relaxation and bliss. We're talking about, is the awareness present right now? So it's, in order to answer this question, we have to turn away a little bit from the content of the experience. Just a little bit, not like ignore the experience, but just look a little bit behind it. Does it make sense? Like, I'm thinking about all kinds of stuff, I'm having all kinds of feelings, I feel tense, and well, is awareness present right now? So I ask ourselves this question in a very experiential way. And that's the trick to these inquiry questions. They can't be abstract questions or philosophical questions or logical questions. They're totally experiential questions. Is awareness present right now? Well, I know it is, because Kokyo just told me it is. No, like, I have to check for myself. And if we keep doing this kind of inquiry, I think that one of the harder parts is to keep it fresh, like as if we don't know the answer. Is awareness present right now? We have to check to see. That might sound strange, but we actually can stop and check. And I find when I'm doing this that I feel a little shift of the mind that, say, it's engaging in thinking about whatever. Like right now, it's engaging in thinking about these words and how to express these conceptual ideas. And I've kind of lost touch with the experiencing. Right? But I can ask it right now while I'm talking, is experiencing present? And I feel like a shift. It's a kind of looking back. That's what it feels like to me. Oh, even while I'm talking, yeah, there's actually an experiencing of talking right now. But I wasn't paying attention to it at all until I asked the question. Is awareness present now? Yes, and I'm still thinking and I'm still talking, but it's there. It almost seems like I'm half paying attention to the conversation, but now I'm paying a little more attention to the awareness of it, which again is not an object. That's another one of the difficult things here. We're like, is awareness present? We're trying to look for it as something, even subtly as something that we can kind of get a hold of. It's like the light in the room. We're not going to get it like that. But Is there light present in the room right now? Yeah, totally, of course, yeah. Can we see it? No. Is awareness present right now? Yes, it is. Can we get a hold of it or grasp it as some experience? Can we have an experience of awareness? No, it is experiencing. If we somehow feel like it's an experience, then it's just slipped into like an object again. And we can go back to, what is it that's experiencing this experience that I'm calling awareness? So it's always taking this step back into what is ungraspable. So this, again, might sound abstract, but as we get used to it, it's not abstract. It's just a very strange thing because we're so used to paying attention to experiences. But we, I propose, can pay attention to experiencing. It's like we're forming a kind of relationship. It's like we're getting intimate with experiencing without being able, it's like, but it's in the dark, this relationship. We can't see it. Our friend experiencing awareness here. But we're kind of more and more can feel as if this is awareness right here. At the same time as his experience is happening. So it's like usually I would say we're paying attention to some experience, and that's the foreground of our consciousness, our attention. And there's a little bit of attention, a tiny bit in the background that we don't even notice, that's paying attention to the awareness. Some Buddhist traditions propose that there's always this self-aware, direct cognition, like awareness is being aware of itself, but we don't notice this because we're into the experience, the object. But that, so most of our attention is going towards the experience, but there's a little bit in the background paying attention to experiencing or awareness. So this practice by asking, is awareness present right now? Is like shifting the ratio of foreground and background. So now we like let the sense of awareness come a little bit more into the foreground, and the experience of thinking or seeing or hearing, a little bit is still happening, but it's a little bit more in the background. Does that make sense? Like usually the experiencing is in the background and the experience is in the foreground. We ask this question, is awareness present right now? Now awareness comes a little bit more into the foreground, not as an object, but just a sense of there is awareness here. And the experience proceeds a little bit more into the background, what we're paying attention to. So this question, you can work with it. Is awareness present right now, or is experiencing present right now? Or am I experiencing? Or am I aware? They're all the same question. And ask it as if we're like a little child, like very naive, like we don't know the answer. The answer will always be yes, in case you didn't know. It can't be no. If you can ask the question, there is experiencing going on. But we have to ask it as if we don't know that answer. In other words, we have to kind of check. It's kind of a silly thing, but I think the exercise of checking is, I find, quite profound. It does something. Is awareness present now? I feel my attention shift from this conversation back. I say back, but it just feels like it's like the background awareness of the conversation. In Zen, we call it turning the light around and shining back. The light that's directed towards experiences, we shine the light back on itself. Can everybody relate to this little shift? It's quite subtle. Anyone not follow so far? what happens here. Again, I think if it gets a little confusing or abstract, I think some of the common pitfalls here are we think that awareness, again, will be some type of experience. That's where we often feel like, I feel like I'm not getting it because I'm looking for something. That's a common pitfall. It's not something. It's the source of everything. It's the knowing. It's not a thing that we'll experience. But does it sense? Maybe sense isn't exactly the right word, but kind of like a sense that there's awareness here. We know that there's awareness here. So a follow-up question to this question, is awareness present? To kind of, I feel like it helps congeal the settling into awareness. Follow-up question is, how do I know? Remember, the first question is, am I aware right now? Let's check. Yes. And I know I am. Are you sure you are? Yes, I'm totally sure. We should be totally sure. In fact, I would even say it's the only thing we can ever be completely sure of. Everything else is a little bit up for question. But whether we're experiencing, it's the bottom line. If we're alive, yes. So, but then how do we know this? Yes, I'm aware, but how do I know I'm aware? Or what is it that knows that I'm aware right now? What would you say when you ask experientially? You can throw out an answer.
I feel, I touch, I smell, I see.
So,
I have an image in my mind.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying there's an experience. Those are all experiences, right? Mm-hmm. So because there's experiences, I know there's experiencing. That's valid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an experience of sound or color or something, so then I know there must be experiencing. It's a little bit like we deduce that there must be experiencing. So through these experiences, the more we can, I think it's nice to actually, that's where I think we do commonly go, is to the experience, because that's our dominant thing. But to maybe another question would be like, without relying on some object or experience like color, sound, and touch, and so on, is awareness present right now? That might be a little bit harder, because it might feel like, well, there's always some experience happening. But as we get this, as we turn this light back and have this sense of just presence or awareness, it's almost, I would propose, we can get used to it, not deducing that it's here because of the experiences, but actually having a sense of presence or awareness that doesn't depend on the experience. Yes?
Well, I think you're describing something that's been going on in me since I started this practice about a year and a half ago. And I've been asking teachers, but I haven't been asking it the right way. I haven't expressed it the right way.
It's hard to talk about this in words.
And the first time I remember asking was, I asked Neil Leahy, and the way I described it, I said, it's almost as if I'm outside of myself watching myself. And she said, well, you don't want to be outside of you. But I didn't really mean outside.
Uh-huh, mind. Yeah.
But, so you say, how do I know? It's like a second layer. It's like my mind is observing myself as I'm living.
Mm-hmm, mind. Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's what I think you're talking about.
Yeah, so this follow-up question, how do I know I'm aware? It's like that observing or experiencing or awareness, that's what knows the awareness, right? So I think this follow-up question, you have to play with this in your own experience, but I find first asking, is awareness present right now? I feel this shift, what I would call almost backwards. In order to answer the question, I have to kind of look back. And then there's this sense of like, yes, awareness is present. And then, how do I know? Like, yes, I'm sure I know awareness is present, but how or what is it that knows? Well, it's the same awareness knows awareness. So you could say there's not some other, and I think that's when we first look, it starts seeming like a split. There's some outside looking in, but I think if we get more and more intimate with our own experience, we find that it's actually like awareness is knowing itself. There's not two of them, not one looking at the other. It's a self-knowing awareness. It's an awareness that's knowing itself all the time. And at the same time, awareness is being aware of itself. It also can be aware of experiences. This is a model you can try out in your experience to see if you can relate to it being like that. Yes.
It sounds like taking the backward step. That's one.
Yes, exactly. That's what I would say Dogen is referring to, is this particular method.
Yeah. But I'm also pondering about, there's this image of, the Zen person just taking the great leap or something, and then, so if you're taking a leap, are you also taking the backward step at the same time? I mean, to kind of observe yourself, or observe leaping, I guess. Observe concentration, or whatever it is.
Or is leap like just spontaneous activity, would you say?
Well, I think that's the, I guess.
Is that what you mean by leap?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, without kind of being self-conscious.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Self-conscious is like, maybe I shouldn't leap, and like,
Should I go?
So I think, self-conscious, in our colloquial way of talking, is not the same as self-knowing awareness. Self-conscious, I would say, is when it seems to be divided. Like there's one part of ourself looking at the other part and kind of wondering if it's okay. And so that's just kind of split, I would say that's dualistic consciousness. But the self-knowing awareness is all-inclusive, and nothing's outside of it, and therefore it can be spontaneous activity. It is leaping, and when we're in touch with that, there's a great trust of in this kind of leaping, based on that there's no separation. I haven't mentioned how this ties yet into no separation, but this awareness is another question we could ask is how big is this awareness when we start getting in touch with it? How big is it? Like really, again, in our experience, not the kind of what would be the right answer, but feel into like what's the size of this awareness. Remember, it's not an object. It's like the light filling the room. How big is the light filling the room? And it's pretty clear that it has no size, right? If it has no size, that means everything is included within it, by definition. And therefore, there's no split. There's nothing outside it.
There's no observation.
Yeah, and there's no observation. Yeah, an observer or a knower or the one who is aware would be like another object, actually, a subtle kind of object. Because that one, like me, myself, we often use self in this, I'm a body and mind, separate self. That kind of self is an experience. Right? We could call it the small self of the body and mind, what I feel to be this particular body and mind, that's an experience. What is it that's experiencing this small self? Buddha nature, awareness. Big self, that the true. Buddha said, this Buddha nature is my true self. So you could say, there's a boundless, ungraspable big self that's experiencing my little, constricted, small self. And when it sees that this small self is included in the big one, then there can be this leaping without self being self-conscious. Yes.
So I really appreciate the way you put all that. It was very clear. clear, you know, and I was trying to work through that with you. It's like I can't help but take that experience and then make an object of that.
Experiencing, I mean?
Experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I try to look at it, then it seems like I make an object.
Yeah, the experiencing becomes an experience.
And that's the object.
Yes. That's often what happens. So that's part of the trick, is if you can catch yourself doing that, which you are, it sounds like, how great, because then you can see, I just made it into an experience. And then a question you could ask at that time to get back to it is, now I feel like there's some experience, even if it's a subtle one, like it feels like a ball of light or something, right? Then you could, it feels like radiant light, that's a little bit of an experience, and then you could ask, what is it that's experiencing that? And that takes you right back to the ungraspable.
Is that consciousness that I'm looking at that object, is that my true self? Is that what we're saying is my Buddha nature?
I wouldn't say it's the one looking at the object, but it's the looking. Right? It's the experiencing. It's not the experiencer. And this is another subtlety, is like we feel like, yeah, okay, I'm not making it into an object, but I am the experiencer of this universe. Then we're subtly making experiencing now into a subject. So that's it. And we're so used to doing this. We either make experiencing into a subject or an object, but it's not a subject or an object. It's just experiencing. It's boundless and unlocated, and yet ever-present and undeniable. And that's why I say, we can share this one Buddha nature, because it's not somehow in this body. It's not in this person. Sometimes we say all beings have Buddha nature, like it's something in us, like our soul inside us. But like Dogen didn't like to say all beings have Buddha nature. He turned that phrase to all beings are Buddha nature. It's just like there's nothing other than Buddha nature. But, of course, it appears, Buddha nature appears as a body and a mind, and another body and a mind. There's another question over here. Yes?
There's a lot of analogies I could think of. One of them is cycling. I ride my bike most everywhere, and I'm hyper attentive to things coming at me at all angles. And I'm admittedly a very aggressive cyclist. I'm very, very fast. Very risk-taking. That said, much of my reactions and my experiencing, experiences, are without thought, I think, almost immediate self-preservation decisions that have served me very well. After 40-something years, I've only had one extraordinarily bad accident. I continually deal with, do I go into some sort of, in my mind I picture a vacuum. I don't think the monastery's that, where I've isolated external experiences or isolated myself directly from them.
I mean, you could say there's a unified awareness when you're cycling like that. There's a presence, and it's undivided, and it's very present because you have to be paying attention. So this presence is, you kind of maybe are more in touch with the full experiencing, and there's all these different experiences happening quickly, sounds and other bikes and cars and so. You have to be alert to all these experiences, so maybe you're more in touch at that time with the sense of the experiencing. Anything that helps us be really present, I think, is helps us tune in to this experiencing, because the experiencing is always present. So if we're thinking about past and future a lot, that's when, of course, the experiencing is still always present. It never can go anywhere, but we really lose touch with it. But in this bike riding like this, it's the experiences are so present that I think that helps us get in touch with that which is experiencing. So that would be, you could even do that when you're riding a bike I don't think you would crash or something. If you ask, like, in the midst of this dynamic experience of bike riding with all its sub-experiences, what can is there an experiencing right now? I think you can turn a light around like that, and because it doesn't mean that you stop paying attention to the experiences. Some people might think, you'd immediately crash, but you just shift the ratio. You don't have to crash. You're still paying attention to the experiences, but there's a background experiencing. We can hopefully, while we're talking now, see if you can keep, I'm trying to do this right now. I keep forgetting. I have to constantly be talking about the very activity, or else I forget. That's how talking is. Was there another question? Yes.
So, all of your bodies sit in this room, we are all experiencing light?
Yes.
The same light?
The same light. Are you talking about the light of Buddha nature?
Yeah,
the light of Buddha nature. Again, to kind of turn this language, you know, trying to use the language precisely, would say, if we say we are experiencing the light of Buddha nature, then it almost, that language could kind of make it into an experience again, right? Whereas you say, if we say we are the experiencing that is called light or Buddha nature, it's not like we're experiencing it. We are, the Buddha nature is the experiencing. And that one, we're all, they're these bodies, and you could say we, or I, am actually, as the Buddha said, I am not this body, but I am the experiencing. I am the Buddha nature, the awareness that's experiencing a body. Did that turn it a little bit? Yes.
In the Western Christian story, there's these two sayings, I am that I am.
Yeah.
And also, the Holy Spirit will come and bring all things to your remembrance.
And also, I am the light of this world.
Yes. So, pointing to the word spirit, could that be said in a way as the awareness as the true self?
Well, we have to maybe get into kind of a interface dialogue or something. I don't want to speak for Christianity totally, but I think there's a lot of parallels here. And whether the Holy Spirit is Buddha nature, it could be related. But I wouldn't want to misrepresent Christianity by just saying offhand that they're the same. But yeah, many parallels. So I think in all religions, in all spiritual traditions, many parallels. The light. Yes.
Yeah, you did mention earlier about posing the question as a child.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's another good connection. Yeah. Like we're so, as we become adults, we get so sophisticated and like, is awareness present? Yeah, of course it is. What a stupid question, we might say, right? But like, that's an adult way of approaching such things. But a child, really like a small child, you might ask, are you aware right now? And they might be like, wow, that's an interesting question. Am I? How open. We have to be very open to ask these kind of questions. Yes. Yeah. Spirit, maybe. If we say that it's that which is cannot be grasped and yet ever present. And starting to sound similar. Yes.
Like a lot of people, I think, sometimes I feel beset by the objects of experience.
Like, overwhelmed by?
Frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Frustrated by the victim of.
Yes, totally.
So forth. And then, but there, then sometimes there can come a kind of grace that descends. It seems it descends like light. And the objects of experience are okay.
Mm.
And I'm okay with them.
Mm.
Even though just a second ago I was kind of beset by
them.
Or maybe it wasn't just a second ago.
Yeah, sometimes we just, you know, we get tired of having some problems, so we just let it go. But so that's what we can see, is it just did that problem wear itself out, or is there something to do with this, are we getting in touch with this knowing that actually is always free from the experiences, right while they're happening? Like that's why I think this key point that we can be experiencing pain, but we can be in touch with experiencing is not in pain while the pain is happening. And you might say that's like a split or something, but not really experientially, right? It's just like we're shifting the perspective. We're attending to that which experiences pain. I think this is a key point. That which experiences pain, that which is aware of pain, is itself not pain and never can be pain. Can you follow that? Kind of in your experience? It's a little bit of like really teasing these apart, really clarifying. There's pain here right now, but there's an awareness that's just experiencing the pain. And this awareness is the same awareness as the one that experiences ecstasy and great joy. And so we're so into like, I want the ecstasy and not the pain. And that's why we get caught up in these objects of experiences. But when I think the Buddha is often talking about, he's not talking about trying to manipulate your experience. When he's talking about nirvana, is that which is unborn and unchanging and undying. And we know the Buddha had back pain and dysentery at the end of his life. There was great physical pain. But I would understand that the Buddha was in touch with this nirvana. Actually, the Buddha later said is another name for this Buddha nature, which is not having a problem. It's experiencing a problem, but it itself is free, right in the midst of the pain. Yeah, this can be. It's not about getting rid of pain. It's being that which is experiencing. Yes.
What do you think the relationship is between the practice of samadhi and the verb of Buddha nature?
The verb of Buddha nature, or experiencing. Samadhi is a big topic, but in the Mahayana teachings, they often start using samadhi with these different types of samadhi, different names of samadhi, as another name for, I would propose, for this awareness of Buddha nature. It's particularly in Zen. So like we have the jewel mirror samadhi, I propose, is a poetic description of this mirror-like awareness that just receives every reflection equally without discrimination and is always present. And it's not like a state that we cultivate. As I would understand, the jewel mirror samadhi is always present, but we can get in touch with it sometimes and be out of touch with it. And same with the self-fulfilling samadhi is Dogen's description of Zazen. Or literally, it's like another translation would be self-enjoyment samadhi. So it's this realm that's always enjoying itself. Even while there's pain going on. This knee pain is so excruciating. But meanwhile, there's an awareness that's enjoying itself at the same time. And we kind of can get in touch with that awareness by, for example, asking, is awareness present right now? Is self-enjoyment, samadhi present right now? Can look. Yeah, it is, but I just totally forgot about it. But as soon as I asked, I remembered it again. Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Sometimes we say samadhi also in the earlier part of the tradition, it's more like just any kind of concentration. And I think later in Zen, it's more like it's not so much a focused concentration. It's more like the reality realm that's always happening. And but I think that's right. If we just take it as samadhi power, jōriki, right, as like the focused concentration, then you could say the Zen kind of understanding of the focused concentration is not to just feel this total fixation on a particular point, which is nice feeling, but it's just like you say, in order to remember to ask this question. I think that's a nice thing, as you can say. We can do this question and actually find a little freedom right now when asking, but then we only ask it once every month. Then the rest of the time we're just like, things aren't going so well. But if we could ask such a question, remember to ask such a question all the time, more and more often, you could say that's the... Once we understand what this question is doing, then it's like we're doing it more and more often. And I think it is actually just a matter of remembering. It's creating a kind of new habit of remembering. Is a kind of... And samadhi helps with that. So... Yes. How about last question, and then we can have a period of zazen.
I do get a sense of joy when I am, shining the light within, as you say, in that process. Mm-hmm. There's a famous corner, thanks to me, where... Anyway.
Corner?
Traffic builds up. Frustration builds up, because somehow I always seem to want to get there quicker.
Mm-mm.
But nowadays, my frustration's still the same. Mm-hmm. But I see myself being frustrated, and there's a kind of a joy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It could be that. I think it's nice to notice that this is an unconditioned joy. If it's a joy that comes from things that are going well, then when those conditions change, it will disappear. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just like the joy of sentient beings. But this Buddha kind of joy is the one that's always the case when we remember it and recognize it. It's unconditioned. It's joyful for no reason at all. And it's enjoying itself. So then you could say the self-enjoyment samadhi, I would say, the self we're talking about here, again, is another name for Buddha nature. Big self. Right? It's enjoying itself all the time, even when the little self, this body and mind, Tokyo, is not enjoying himself. The samadhi is enjoying itself. But because the samadhi is enjoying itself, when Tokyo gets in touch with that samadhi, then he, in his body and mind, starts to enjoy, like the big self joy starts to seep into the experience. Then we can say, I can say this is a joyful experience. But again, that's just a kind of a leakage from the ongoing, ever-present joy into the experience. So I think this is another kind of tricky topic that people talk about, enlightenment experience. Because from this perspective, I would say enlightenment is, by its definition, is not an experience. It is the experiencing itself, right? But there can be these times when one seems really in touch with it, and they could call that an enlightenment experience. It's not exactly really it, because it's an experience. You could say we're trying to attend to the experiencing, and yet, like Suzuki Roshi talks about getting letters from emptiness, receiving a letter from emptiness, and then you read it, and it's kind of it's a joyful letter. It's kind of like, it's like when you feel like, I feel really great now because I'm really in touch with that in this body, and my body actually is relaxed because I'm more in touch with. It's kind of a letter from emptiness. It's kind of a leakage from reality into this conditioned experience, in time and space, and it's temporary. Enlightenment experiences, it happens at a certain time and location, and then it goes away. So that's not what we're really trying to emphasize. But if we can get in touch with that, which is always enjoying itself in a kind of cool way. It's not like we're like, is awareness present? Yeah, and it's like ragingly ecstatic. So it's just like, it just doesn't have a problem. That's called self-enjoyment. So we can continue in the afternoon, especially. We didn't really get into the non-separation part. This is all prelude to non-separation. I'll just throw out a Zen saying of Changsha, who said that this is about the non-separation coming from this understanding, that the entire universe in the 10 directions is the radiant light of the self. The entire universe in 10 directions is within the radiant light of the self. In the entire universe in 10 directions, there's not a single person who is not myself. We can look more at that this afternoon.